Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Netflix has a new top attraction in Badland, an independently made flick getting a second life in the bargain. Producer and star Kevin Makeley joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Apple TV's new attraction is Loot, spelled L-O-U-P-E. It's a candidate for most unique programming venture of 2020. It's a 24/7 display of motion art. We'll get the full picture on this picture later this hour from Chief Executive Dot Bustelo and Chief Curator Nicole Colts. Also ahead, advertisers flirted to Peacock, Black News Channel sees its chief depart, there will be a National Geographic May miniseries, and we honor a major TV comedy maker. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A very good after Easter Monday to you, and welcome to the program All About Television. Also welcome all of our Jewish listeners now in their 5th day, almost 6th night of Passover. 58 degrees at the top of the hour. We're in the middle of a huge downpour, including some high heavy winds, that the National Weather Service is saying that between now and 6 o'clock we'll get to between 60 and 70 miles plus per hour. And that's why we're coming to you today on a speakerphone hookup, where you may be finding some breaks in the action, sound breaks in the action. So if you hear any no sound, it means I'm going from one room where my computer is to the other where you are hearing me right now. Got some good guests for you over the next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and dial in at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. We got a chat room going. Simon Apple 04 by name. We've already got some people in the room, and that's another way you can be involved in the program. So if you're shy about the phone, use the room. It's there for you. And you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is on the air, you connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be interactive with you. Kevin Makeley from Badland will be interactive with us from Los Angeles after these news notes. We're less than 36 hours away from stage one of Peacock's launch. When NBC Universal's mega programming service comes to Comcast cable systems nationwide Wednesday, at least 9 advertisers will participate in various ways. They are Capital One, L'Oreal, Molson Cook Beverage, that's the famous beer makers, Subaru, Verizon, State Farm Insurance, Target, Unilever, and Apartments.com. Peacock will present up to 5 minutes per hour of advertising and be free to consumers. Some of the ads will be non-traditional, that means not 15 or 30-second or minute-long messages, or interactive. Peacock will circulate the Comcast subscriber base July 15th under a Stage 2 rollout involving smart TV sets, other cable operators, and TV-connected gadgets. By the way, Peacock will have a press conference tomorrow afternoon. I'll be on that conference. We'll have details that pop up there on our episode Friday. Just 2 months into Black News Channel's existence, Chief Executive Officer and co-founder Bob Bugliante is out. He stepped down last Friday, with a network official announcing he will pursue other opportunities. Co-founder J.C. Watt will take the CEO seat on a temporary basis while the search for Bugliante's successor progresses. We'll keep you posted on that. There will be a May scripted miniseries on National Geographic after all. The space left open by postponing the Aretha Franklin run of genius with Cynthia Erivo will be filled by Barskins, I believe it's called. Barskins, adapted from the historical novel by bestselling author Anthony Perot, set in 1690s New Canada. The 8-part series will debut Memorial Day night, May 25th. INSP, previously the Inspirational Network, will go forward with Wild West Chronicles, a 12-episode recreation of American West incidents based on personal accounts. Morningstar Productions will start crafting the series later this year. Now some quickies. Make That 3 comic book publishers Netflix has first book deals with for live-action and animated series. Boom Studios, which inspired Netflix's The Dark Crystal series, whose one of its creators was on our program some time back, now joins Miller World and Dark Horse with those arrangements. ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network present live NFL draft coverage simultaneously from April 23rd to the 25th. And former Skydance television chief Marcy Ross is now president of SK Global TV, working on TV as well as film projects there. And that's news notes for today. Our program this hour is quite unusual. on our second half hour, we'll showcase a programming service that might be a candidate, as I said in the tease, for most unique of this year. It deals with a new form of art called motion art. More about that in our second half hour. But first, we're going to tell you the tale of an independently-made movie last year that has found its way this year to Netflix, and the last few weeks has become one of that service's top attractions. It's called Badlands. And joining us live from Los Angeles right now is its producer and star, Kevin Makeley. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
How did Badlands come to be?
Well, this is I have a company, a production company called Pop Octopus Productions. This is actually our fifth Western, but our fifth movie, our third Western, but our first one to make it to Netflix. So it's something we do. We make independent films. We love Westerns. And this one, we partnered with a new company called Cinedigm Entertainment that has a really good relationship with Netflix. We made a movie. We worked really hard to get an amazing cast, Mira Sorvino, Bruce Stern, Wes Studi, Trace Atkins, to name a few. And it attracted the likes of Netflix. We got a deal, and America watched it, and we couldn't be more excited.
I understand that it was, at least at one point earlier this month, the number four movie attraction on Netflix. Is that still the case, or has it gone higher or lower?
It actually made it to number three on the it was the third most watched movie on Netflix for a short while, and it made it to number seven on the overall everything Netflix, including Ozark and Tiger King and all those shows. So it was a big hit for about a week, and now every week they release new things, and certain movies move up and down. So we're no longer on that list, but people are still watching it. It's still getting a great response. But the fact that it was the third most watched movie on Netflix for about a week was unbelievable. What an unbelievable response. And the crazy thing is that there was really no marketing behind it. It was a very small independent film, and small in budget-wise, large in scope. And it just happened to click with people, and they watched it and made it number three. The people made it number three, which is so exciting, so exciting.
Why do you think that happened? Why do you think it caught on with the Netflix crowd?
You know, obviously, as the actor and producer, I want to say we made an amazing movie, so everybody watched it. Obviously, partially that is true. I think we made a great film. We put a lot of heart and soul into the film, so I think that translates. But you know, there's a flip side to either side. It's one, everybody is home right now, or most people are home right now watching Netflix in record numbers. So a lot more eyeballs were on Netflix. The flip side of that is that there's a lot of people watching Netflix. Why did they all choose to watch or a huge majority choose to watch Badlands? You know, it's up for debate. I think, you know, we're in a strange time. We have, there's a leader saying things, and we're, you know, out there, and we're very America conscious right now. And I don't think you speak more American than a Western. And, you know, the Westerns are the mythology of the United States. And, you know, Jesse James is the King Arthur of America. You know, this is this romantic mythology that we have, you know, of American history right here in America, telling a piece of history. Not that this movie is loosely based on some facts, nothing definitive, but it's just a telling of the old West. And I think people wanted that little bit of escapism, and there weren't a lot of Westerns out at this moment in time. So it just clicked, and people liked it, and they told their friends and their family, and it just spread like wildfire, which was, I think it came out on a Thursday, and by Saturday it was number four in movies. So again, without any advertising, just completely organic.
You're hearing Kevin Makeley. He is the producer and the star of the independently made movie Badlands, which found its way onto Netflix a few weeks ago, and it's one of the top attractions there. believe it or not, with not a lot of marketing or promotion. Kevin joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, the program all about the tube. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. 58 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for Kevin? We'll ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have the creator and executive producer of a series that premiered earlier today on Video On Demand Systems, courtesy of Charter's Spectrum Originals Venture. It's called Paradise Lost. It's going to premiere on Video On Demand now, and then later will appear on Paramount Network. And you will hear from this executive producer, creator, and writer, Rhodes Fishburne. That's Rhodes Fishburne of Paradise Lost, which premiered earlier today on Spectrum Originals. He'll be with us as our lead guest on Friday. And also, what is the status of smart TV sets and smart TV devices? The folks at Hub Entertainment Research have a brand new study that just came out today called Connected Home 2020. And our good friend David Tice from Hub will be with us. That's all Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Talk a little bit about how this film was made in the first place. How long did you think about doing this kind of Western?
This was a project we had created a few years back. What we liked about it was that, obviously, I love the character, Matthias William Breacher. I play him, and he's basically a culmination of every film male role model I had growing up. He's a little Clint Eastwood. He's a little bit Sylvester Stallone. He's a little bit Mark Hamill in the vein of Luke Skywalker. He has all of those things, so I love that character. But we wanted to create a story that the main character would intertwine with a lot of different people, giving us the advantage of casting some really amazing actors to come in just for a few days each, so we could afford to get bigger names into our small independent film, but not sacrificing, they're not in it as cameo roles. They're these characters, from Trace Atkins, Mira Sorvino plays a huge role. She worked for quite a few days, but Bruce Stern and Wes Studi and Trace Atkins, Jeff Fahey, Tony Todd, their roles, some of them don't have a ton of screen time, but each role is as important as the rest of the roles. Each one tells a pivotal story, and it's not just the normal cameos you get in an independent film where a name comes in and says a couple of things and gets killed or leaves or whatever. Each character in this story tells a very important part of the story. And that was really attractive to us. It's something that we were really trying to create, because being in the business of independent film, you often, you have to put a few names. It's just the reality. You have to put some recognizable names in the movies. And it's very hard, to get big names for a long duration of time, because you have to spend a lot of money on that. And, it gets very tricky on how can you get somebody in a film for a long enough amount of time that it's credible, and be able to afford it. So this movie, the story was fantastic, and it gave us that opportunity to work with so many good actors, and we were able to afford to do it on an independent film budget. That was one of the main, and plus it's a very timely story. I think it's very relevant to what's happening, maybe not now with COVID-19, but prior to that. And as well as there are two very strong female characters in it that the hero doesn't really save. He sets out to save them, but in the end, they save him, both of them. And it's a very unique and timely telling of a twist on a classic Western. So we loved it. We loved the idea, and we made it.
Kevin, one of the reasons why we wanted to focus on this particular film is because of the kind of cast that you put together. I mean, it's not every day you get people like Mira Sorvino, an Oscar winner, Bruce Dern, who's done many a Western, Wes Studi, similar, a wonderful character actor, and quite a few other folks in your film. How do you do that? How do you get that level of cast in a movie like yours?
A lot of phone calls. a lot of lunches. The reality is that we have been around for a while. This is our fifth film, so we've made quite a few contacts. We're very friendly with Jeff Fahey and Tony Todd's manager, Jeff Goldberg. He's a great guy, stand-up guy. Become very friendly with Bruce Dern's manager, Alan Summers. You know, so we actually cast Bruce, and because we cast Bruce Dern first, he loved the role. It opened up the door to get bigger names. So once Mira Sorvino saw that Bruce Dern was attached, she knew it was a serious project. She read the script. She loved the script. We had lunch, and she signed on. Once we had Bruce and Mira attached, it was much easier to get everybody. Everybody else kind of fell into place. But I think that all of the actors actually really loved the script. And then we had a body of work that showed that even though it's an independent film with not a ton of money behind it, we've made some quality films in the past. So they weren't just signing on to do a film that, you know, may or may not be seen or may or may not come out good. We had a track record. We've been working very hard in this business to climb the ladder. And it just all fell into place at the right time, much like the success of Netflix. It just was in the right place at the right time. So, but built on hard work and relationships that we've been working very hard to cultivate.
As an actor, as well as a producer, how much of a stretch was this character you played? And also, did you, given that it has a Western setting, did you model it after a famous or unfamiliar legend of the West?
Well, I, as an actor, like I said, I grew up in a single mother home, so I didn't really have any male influences. And my mother was a cinephile and a Trekkie. So we watched a lot of Star Trek. We watched a lot of Star Wars. We went to every – I'm a product of the 80s. So my male role models were Clint Eastwood and Stallone and Schwarzenegger and, all these guys. So I've been researching this role my whole life. I'm a huge Western fan. Clint Eastwood is my hero. So clearly, and I really don't hide it at all, clearly I'm projecting Clint Eastwood. I'm not copying him. I'm homaging him. And all of the Western, I'm just going to say badasses that came before me. And I really don't hide the fact at all that it's an homage, it's a love letter to the spaghetti Western, to Clint Eastwood, to all my heroes growing up. It was not really a stretch for me to play. I'm a very physical person. I did all my own stunts. I rode the horse. I shot all the guns. I did everything, everything that you see happening in the film, I did myself. And I'm a very physical guy. So it wasn't a stretch. It was an honor and it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure to go to, as hard as it is being a producer, to get a film off the ground as the actor. It was a pleasure to step, put my foot in those boots every day and to work with actors that I grew up loving and respecting, and emulating, to be able to work with them face to face. In a movie that we created that I star in was a dream come true. It was a dream come true.
Who directed and wrote the film, and how did you work with them in its making?
Well, it's a gentleman named Justin Lee. We had made several films together. Unfortunately, we don't really work together anymore. We kind of had a little falling out at the end of this film. I don't really want to get into it, but yeah, he wrote the film and directed it, and that's about it.
The name of the film we're talking about is Badland, and you can find it on Netflix, which is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And we have this half hour, and tomorrow we televise live from Los Angeles. It's producer and its star, Kevin Makeley. And he'll be with us for a few more minutes. And by the way, if you'd like to talk with him, all you got to do is put your thoughts in the chat room, SimonApple04 by name, or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Next Saturday night, HBO has a very interesting made-for-TV movie starring Hugh Jackman and Alyssa Janney. It's called Bad Education. It's based on true events that happened not so far from here in the New York metropolitan area. And we'll have an exclusive interview this Friday next Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised with its writer and executive producer, Mike Makowski. And then we have another unique television network that we will showcase for you on Monday. It's called VEN, Video Game Entertainment News Network. Its creators are calling it the MTV of gaming, and it's set to premiere all over the place this July. We'll speak with its co-chief executive officers, Ariel Holm and Ben Kuzin. It's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. First of three episodes we are doing next week. We have a lot of interesting interviews in the mix for you. So be with us next Monday, next Wednesday, next Friday, all at this very hour, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, for the program All About Television. We promise to keep you company. And as always, we want you to be interactive with our guests by phone or by chat room. Kevin, this is the latest example of Netflix not doing any promotion or marketing for one of their projects, and bang, it gets an audience. We have seen it happen time and time again, whether it's been with shows like On My Block, more recently Gentified, more recently unscripted shows like Cheer, like Tiger King, which had the special after show with Joel McHale last night. Why do you think Netflix is having this habit, a great habit for them, of coming up with shows that they don't market or publicize beforehand, and bang, they become big hits?
Well, you know, I think Netflix is at the forefront. They're the leaders of the streaming platforms. They were at it first. I mean, I think a lot of us remember when you used to put the DVD in the mail, you know, and you would have a queue, and you know, they've been at this for a long time. And I think what they do, they build these algorithms. And I'm not even going to, you know, attempt to imagine the coding and the stuff that goes into these algorithms that they make up, but they've certainly hired very smart people to figure out how to follow and track what people like and what people watch, and they've created a formula. So, you know, like the suggestions that you get and the trending and everything, I think they control, you know, what they want people to see, or what, you know, they have a handle on it. I think a lot of the other companies, unfortunately, are playing catch up to how successful Netflix is. They basically created this monster, and they're at the top of it, and they're very good at what they do. And now they create their own programming, and, you know, it's like NBC makes a show, and on NBC, they advertise that show like crazy. But NBC is one channel out of a lot of channels that people can watch. Netflix is one app or one streaming service that people can watch, but it has 167 million subscribers. That's enormous. So if they just say, new this week, Tiger King, Netflix original, just having Netflix original on it, people are going to think it's quality. So being part of Netflix is, you know, just speaks quality. And then they don't really advertise, but they put it on there. They recently came up, it was a huge benefit to my film. And it's just a brilliant strategy for them to get their films out there, as well as expose the films that other people are watching. Just really, you know, kudos to Netflix. This is the companies like Netflix really changed the game for indie filmmakers and television producers, and it just leveled the playing field. When a huge studio film could be next to a film like Badland, could be next to a show like Tiger King, all bets are off. The people will watch what the people want to watch, and it's really an exciting time, at least for the independent filmmaker, for sure. I think I got a little off topic on that, but it's really an exciting time.
Another trend, Kevin, that we are seeing because of this coronavirus is some of the major motion picture studios now saying, okay, because movie theaters are closed, because home video or DVD stores are closed, we're going to take some of our recent titles or titles that were about to premiere, and we're going to put them on Netflix. We're going to put them on Disney Plus. We're going to put them on Hulu. We're going to put them on Amazon, and because that's the only game in town now, and we don't know how long it's going to be the only game in town. Do you think there's any long-term consequence to this? Do you think we may see, for example, a shift in terms of how the major and even some of the independent film distributors distribute product? Whether services like Netflix become bigger on the chain as opposed to the movie theaters?
I do think there are long-term consequences, but I think this was the kick in the butt that you know, it was the wake-up call, I guess you should say, for a lot of these companies, theater companies. Listen, I am a cinephile. I like nothing more than getting popcorn and, you know, a big bottle of water and going, you know, and seeing a movie in the movie theaters. That's how movies were intended to be seen. That's how they were shot. They're technically weren't, you know, we're not supposed to be, you know, TV is for, you know, television programs are for TV and films are for the screen initially. Obviously, it's nice to be able to watch them at home. But there's been a steady decline in box office sales. There's been a steady decline actually even in DVD and Blu-ray sales. It's all going towards streaming. So do I want it to go away? Certainly not. I don't think movie theaters will ever go away, but I definitely think, you know, this is a way to keep them alive, to keep film alive. If they do a simultaneous, like, I have two small daughters, a 2-year-old and a 3.5-year-old, and Frozen 2 coming out on Disney Plus saved us in the first 2 weeks of quarantine. Is, you know, this shift from mommy and daddy being home all day and still having to work and be with the children at the same time and still teach them, and, you know, the same thing that most of us are all adapting to right now, this work from home, no school lifestyle. Thank you so much, Disney, for releasing Frozen 2. And then just yesterday, we rented for $20, for $19.99, we rented Trolls World Tour. My children love the Trolls. And it was a fun movie. You know, we watched it at home. We spent $20. $20 to rent a movie is crazy talk. But gladly we'll do it. We would spend we'd probably spend $40 to go to the movie, $50 to go to the movies to watch it. We watched it at home. And it was great, and it gives, you know, a lot of people, and a lot of money was spent to bring that movie to life, and to have it all be lost. I mean, I think this was a good game day decision for a lot of companies, for a lot of studios to actually take the chance and release stuff the way that they are, because it's keeping it alive. And I think it was a good move, and I most certainly think it's going to have a ripple effect. Whether it be good or bad has yet to be seen, but I think, it's the wake-up call for everybody to pay attention to the shift of events, the shift towards streaming and the internet and that, you know, and smartphones. Companies like Quibi, you know, they're popping up to adapt to this kind of thing. So I think the major studios will too, because if they go down, it's going to have a real detrimental effect towards film in general. And film is my life. Film is a huge part of almost everybody's life. Everybody loves movies. So I think it was a good step. Whether it be detrimental or not, I don't know. Again, I think it was a wake-up call, and it was a good move on the studio part.
So before you go, Kevin, what's next for you? Are you going to be doing another movie for Netflix, or maybe even go for a television series for the first time?
So actually we have a few things. It's funny you say that. We acquired two book series. One is based on it's a book. I don't want to get too much into because we're still in deals with it, but that we're developing as a TV series. Another one is a book series based on a character called Jake Crosby, written by a gentleman named Bobby Cole. It's a very popular selling book series, and it's a regular guy who gets into crazy circumstances, has to protect his daughter. It's an action survival movie, and then it goes into basically a trilogy of books. So that's on deck. And then we have a great script that was actually on deck to shoot called Day of Reckoning. And it's an awesome ensemble piece and ensemble cast with a lot of great action in it. And it's a modern, you know, it's a modern action movie. It's basically a modern Western, I would say. A lot of Western elements to it. So as soon as the veil is lifted and we're all able to go back to work, we're going to resume shooting. I'm playing the sheriff in this, one of the lead roles in Day of Reckoning. I'm also playing Jake Crosby in the book series, which is fantastic. We're starting to attract a lot of bigger name talent because of our reputation. So, yes, also developing a comic right now based on Badland with comic writer extraordinaire Scott Lobdell. Scott Lobdell created a lot of X-Men characters. He currently writes the Red Hood for DC. He wrote the script for the film Happy Death Day. So we're working on a Badland version, an online comic for Badland, telling some of the previous stories of Detective Matthias William Breacher. So we have a lot of stuff. We're trying to stay busy during this time, busy with things that people can actually see. So once the veil is lifted, we're on to, yes, some more movies, some scripted TV series, and right now we're developing some comic books. Everybody's working from home, and we'll be putting them online, so stay tuned.
But right now you can tune in to Badland on Netflix. You have a smart TV set or smart TV device, you can get Netflix wherever you are. And for more details about both Badland and Netflix online, here's where you go, www.netflix.com, www.netflix.com. That's Badland, now running on that service. Kevin Makey, the producer and star of that film, thank you again for joining us. All the very best to your future projects, and we really appreciate you coming aboard.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you, everyone,
for
watching Badland.
You got it.
Great.
Take care. Enjoy.
That. All right. Bye-bye. Stay safe.
You got it. For sure. You too. Kevin Makeley, producer and star of Badland, joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow will be televised coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks at our sponsor, Audible.com. A few weeks ago, we had one of the executive producers of the big Hulu hit Little Fires Everywhere, and it's still going strong. If you've never read the book by Celeste Ng, well, guess what? You can hear the book. How? With a trial run at Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles that you can choose from at any given time, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, iHeart. It is a great way to pass the time as we all get through this coronavirus pandemic together. And guess what? You can also listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and iHeart Radio. And all this if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. And when you do sign up for a one-month trial, you get your choice of not one, not two, but three free audiobooks, two of them being the growing catalog of Audible originals to choose from. That's One Woman, One Man original performances, the best new original audio productions around, and great Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater shows from all across the U.S. of A and beyond. So maybe make this the day that you invite Audible.com to have you hear for yourself how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. For that one-month trial, three free audiobooks, just go to audibletrial.com/televised. You or someone you know will be glad you did. This is Tomorrow We Televised. We have the promo all about the tube. And when we come back, we're going to introduce you to a new field for television, motion art. We've got the two people who are making it happen with this new series of this new programming service, I should say, called Loot. And their names are Doc Costello and Nicole Kutch. You will hear them from Atlanta and Los Angeles after we pause, after the bottom of the hour, for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradiospreakerandtuneinradio.com. All together, reaching more than 40 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, TuneIn Radio is your home for the ongoing Coronavirus News Channel, 24/7 available to you. The latest reporting about what's going on all over the world, plus original podcasts and much, much more. The Coronavirus News Channel, stay informed. We're all in this together, and we're licking this. 24/7 at TuneIn Radio, tunein.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New York, 58 degrees at the top of the hour, in the middle of a big rainstorm affecting the New York metropolitan area. We are expecting between now and 6 o'clock the most of the storm, about 1 to 2 inches of rain overall, and we understand we may have as high gusty winds as 60 to 70 miles an hour. If you're in the area, stay home for sure. You don't want to get caught in that kind of windstorm. So we're going to stop for a second. We're going to bring our next two guests on, and we will be right back. Okay, we are back, and if you have a question or comment for our next pair of guests, make the call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. I promise you that the two people you're about to meet have what may be a surefire candidate for best unique, original, groundbreaking, you take your pick of words, programming service of the year. It's pronounced Loot. It is spelled L-O-U-P-E. It is currently running on Apple TV, and we understand maybe more smart TV sets and smart TV devices as we speak. And joining us live from Atlanta is the Chief Executive Officer, Dot Bustelo. Hello, Dot.
Hi, Simon. Great to be here.
Great to have you along. And also joining us is the Chief Curator of this programming service, joining us live from Los Angeles, Nicole Cutts. Nicole, come on in.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. And Dot, we'll start with you. What is motion art?
Sure. I'd like to take it back just a minute to explain in a broader sense what our platform is. Loop is a patent-pending platform that's streaming visual art from all over the world on TV. What we did with this launch on Apple TV is expand the platform to the newer art form of motion art. We've all seen it when perhaps you've seen it in a social media GIF, perhaps you've been to an electronic music festival and seen these trippy, extraordinary visuals behind the DJ, or you've walked into a corporate office lobby and seen really tranquil, mesmerizing, hypnotic visuals streaming on a video wall when you walk into the building. There's a number of different types of art that would fall under the category of motion art, video art, animated art that's generated in the computer. And when we expanded the platform this year to broaden it to allow for the display of motion art, we had submissions literally from artists all over the world. The Loop platform is a curated experience. You can think of it like a Spotify, a Netflix for art, where we have these different collections, these different channels of art that are streaming by different themes that can be personalized to the user experience.
Mm-hmm. Nicole, many, many decades ago, there was a production company in Connecticut called Weston Woods, and they did a very popular series of films called Picture Book Parade. They would take mm-hmm. famous children's book titles like The Story About Ping or Mike Mulligan and His Steam Shovel, and using a form of what we now call rotoscoping, they would focus on the illustrations of these books with a narrator, and the book's illustrations would come alive. They were so popular as films that at one point they were presented on television on Captain Kangaroo for many, many years. And even when Captain Kangaroo went off the air, Weston Woods stayed in business for a couple more decades. How is motion art different from what Weston Woods did way back when?
Oh, man. I mean, if anything, I guess it must, you know, we all draw from things that we learned or experienced in the past. But I think, you know, the technology that creates this work of art is very different. If anything, our motion artists are the illustrators in this sense. Like, they're creating work with video as their medium. So really, they're bringing life to the art form as opposed to taking stills of something else and filming that and creating something. It's a little different. But if anything, we all have, you know, roots in our past and are inspired by past video work. So I guess it's just a growth from that, if anything.
Dot, when we first learned about this service in a press release, it mentioned that it was on Apple TV. But a few hours ago, I looked at the website for your service. And we'll give out that website, by the way, at the end of our conversation. And it said that the service may be available in other places like Amazon Fire TV, NVIDIA Shield, and even some of the Android television sets by Sony and other places. Could you update us on that?
Correct. So we launched first the platform on Apple TV back in 2016. And since then, we've expanded our delivery platforms to web streaming. You can go right to our website, loopart.com, and stream these different channels of art. Then we added Amazon Fire Android TV, which speaks to the NVIDIA Shield, as well as various Sony Sharp Panasonic TVs that support the Android TV operating system. And in development now, we're building for Comcast X1. The Motion Art channel that we just launched is exclusive to Apple TV for the next 3 months. That is the only TV platform that you'll be able to watch this particular collection of art on our platform. The other channels of Loop are visible on Amazon Fire, Android TV as well.
We're talking about a very unusual television programming service called Loot. It's spelled L-O-U-P-E, pronounced Loot, and we've got the two people that make it happen on Apple TV and also in other places as well in the smart TV device world. The Chief Executive Officer, Dot Pacello, joining us live from Atlanta, and Nicole Cutts, joining us live from Los Angeles. She's the Chief Creator, and they're both with us this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Good you're with us on a Monday afternoon, wherever you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio, as well as the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Tom Abbott with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for our guests, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have Rhodes Fishburne. He is the executive producer, creator, and writer of what premiered earlier today on video on demand cable systems from Charter Spectrum Original Venture called Paradise Lost. It's a unique Southern Gothic mystery drama that will appear later on the Paramount Network. But Rhodes will be with us live as our lead guest on Friday. Also, what is the latest going on with the world of smart TV sets and smart TV devices, including how they're handling the coronavirus pandemic and providing new services, or are they? There's a brand-new survey that just came out called Connected Home 2020. We'll talk with its co-author from Hub Entertainment Research, our good friend David Tice. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Join us and be interactive with us right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Nicole, how do you curate motion art? Where does it come from? What are some of the artists or some of the places that you go to bring the art together? And once you bring the art together, make it, you know, available to viewers?
Oh, that's such a great question. So it's a combination of a lot of different outlets. We get artist submissions. I also have artists that I follow. Maybe that's on, you know, Instagram, social media, artists whose work I see just out in public spaces that I resonate with, and I'll reach out to them. And a lot of times it's, you know, friends of mine or people I meet at different art shows, and I curate based off of what I think will translate best to our streaming platform and also what I think users, you know, would like to see. That offers like a tranquil vibe, but also, you know, has a bit of that edge and some interesting aspects and outlets to it. Once we gather the submission work, I work with another team member and we create the channel. It's basically like a whole team effort, really. All of Loop, you know, comes together and we feed off of each other and what we'd like to see streaming in the platform and then translate that live to our users.
Dot,
I'd like to add to that. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I was just saying, how do you arrange each hour of Loop? Do you design the art so it all is under one style, let's say, per hour, or do you do the MTV as it used to be approach of video after video after video after video, no matter where the genre is or where it comes from or what the artist is?
So I'm happy to say that we have an average user session that is over 2 hours. If people are turning on Loop and leaving it on like they're music streaming, our platform is using proprietary technology that is continually refreshing the stream. So each time you launch a channel, it's a new experience. The content, the art content is being added to each of the channels every week. And so it's not when you launch a channel, whether it's called Tranquil Impressions, Futuristic Visions, Surreal Psychedelic, that channel will not be the same experience when you turn it on tomorrow as when you watched it today.
And Nicole, how many pieces of art, shall we say, are running, let's say, in the course of a day or a week?
Oh, man. Well, throughout the platform, and we have over 500 images. I want to say like 3,000. I mean, it's, and like Dot said, it's continually being refreshed. Every time you open it up, each channel will have different pieces or randomly selected, and just thousands of works.
Dot, how did you and Nicole come together to put this venture together in the first place?
So I want to say that Nicole is core to the team, and we have a team. There's eight of us that are making this platform happen, and everyone is invaluable to the product, from our product designers to our development and operations. I had this vision for the platform after working many years at Apple on product. And I had been introduced to Nicole first as one of our launch artists on the platform. And her enthusiasm, her own work is phenomenal. I hope you have a chance to see it. Honestly, it was her enthusiasm and appreciation for what we had built as a platform for artists. I don't need to speak for her when she's on the line, but I always remember how she had expressed that until she saw Loop, typically the experience, the digital experience of art, was looking at it in a thumbnail view and a mobile experience on your phone, and to take it out of the small screen and be building a platform for the biggest screens in our lives, the TVs, the video walls. I could just tell that her contagious enthusiasm was what our platform needed. At the time, she was getting an MFA at SCAD. And before she was officially the curator of the platform, she was sharing it with other artists at school and outside of school. And it was a pretty organic experience, wouldn't you say, Nicole?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of fell into place, really. And I do want to take it back. I just immediately, when you presented the idea of Loop to me, it just struck such a chord. Because it brings such a full experience to art that I just feel like it's been so lost in our digital age. And it's like the closest experience I've found to stepping into an art gallery and, you know, experiencing work in that context. And that's always been really beautiful to me. And I love sharing that with artists still.
Mm-hmm. Nicole, when the art appears on the TV screen, is there any sort of sound accompaniment, music, spoken word, anything?
Well, to start, no. However, you can sync your own playlists on our web player using Spotify. So you have the option of including music to accompany your stream. We also have different Loop curated playlists that feed off of this based off of, you know, the channel's vibe and the mood you want to set with that. And we had musicians come in and create playlists of their own, also inspired by the art. So we are able to pair music, but doesn't start off as an audio experience. And Dot, feel free to chime in on any of that too.
Yeah, this is an important question that you bring up, Simon. You know, part of the core of the vision of Loop was to create a visual accompaniment for the now 2 billion people today that actively stream music on a monthly basis. And in that process, to give an opportunity for discovery to visual artists. But we're using very similar technology of music streaming to build our platform. We are working behind the scenes. I'm not going to make any big announcement right now on a direct integration of one of the top music streaming platforms that will be available within the Loop experience. But as Nicole mentioned, at this time, when you're watching any of our TV experiences, you can run any music app simultaneously that you have on your TV. You launch that music app and then you launch Loop, and both apps will play simultaneously. And we believe that any good music is going to sound extraordinary with any display of extraordinary visuals. So we are, in effect, creating a new video for every track, for every song that you listen to. Mm-hmm. There is like a new, refreshed visual experience for that piece of music. It's the evolution of MTV.
Dot, how do you and Nicole and everybody involved with Loot make money? Do consumers pay a fee to see the service? Is it going to be ad-supported? Is it a case where the artists who are represented pay to get in and they get revenue in return? How does it work?
So we do not charge the artists for participation in the platform. We are working on an ad-supported delivery for some of our TV platforms, we are working. There is also, let me take it back, there is an integrated marketplace that doesn't apply as much for the motion artists, but for the photographers, the painters, the mixed media artists, the street artists. We are selling fine art prints and, when it applies, originals through our integrated marketplace as well.
Nicole, where do you and Dot see this venture going? What kind of roads do you see it taking? Do you see additional channels? Do you see maybe a similar type of service to the great classic art from all around the world? Where do you see this all going?
Oh, Simon, really all of those things. I see more channels. I see more art always. We're getting constant submissions. We're always adding to it and always growing. I see more museums. I can only see more coming from this. That's what I love about Loop. It's one of those like beautiful ideas that can always build off of itself, and I just see only growth from here, bringing art into more people's homes and around the world.
And Dot, what kind of role computer animation playing?
Sure.
Beyond cartoons, but just, you know, either computer animation or virtual reality animation or augmented reality, mixed reality, any down-the-road role for that?
I'm sorry, could you ask that one more time?
Yeah, in addition to motion art, and bringing new artists aboard, do both of you see a role for computer-generated animation? Not beyond cartoons, but different directions for that art form. Or, for example, art made from augmented reality or mixed reality, or even combining live action and animation together.
So the motion art is computer-generated art.
Mm-hmm.
As far as what we're building, Simon, is a platform for the beautiful 4K 65-inch TVs in our homes, for the video walls in hotels and hospitals, for all of the existing screens in our lives that are too often filled with only advertising or repetitive news or stock photography screensavers. We're using those screens for a full experience of visual art and giving artists all over the world this opportunity to display their work, not to replace going to a gallery or a museum, not to replace hanging it on the wall, but as a supplement to complement those experiences.
You know, it'll be interesting to see whether we have techniques like motion capture, which involves live action, or we see augmented reality or virtual reality, and see if that blends in to sort of advance this computer-generated animation, this art form, which is really fascinating.
It certainly can.
Again, the name of the service.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I mean, we look forward to involving AR, VR in a purposeful way for our platform, and we look forward to that.
Well, right now, If you're a TV viewer, you can now see Loot on Apple TV. Just go there, and you can also go see it on Amazon Fire TV, NVIDIA Shield, which is a smart TV device, and TV sets made by Sony, Philips, Sharp, Panasonic, and others that use the Android TV operating system. For more details about the service online, here's where you go, L-O-U-P-E, loopart.com. That's L-O-U-P-E-art.com, loopart.com. I think you'll find, as I said, a surefire candidate for one of the most unique programming services to premiere this year. Dot Bustelo, the Chief Executive Officer of The Venture from Atlanta. Nicole Cutts joining us live from Los Angeles, the Chief Creator. Thank you both for coming on. We really appreciate it. All the very best with The Venture, and we'd love to have you back anytime.
Thanks so much,
Thank you, Simon.
Thanks, Nicole.
You're very welcome. Take care. Enjoy your week, and let's get through this pandemic together.
Yes. Cheers to that.
Take care. Bye now.
You too. Dot Bustelo, Nicole Cutts joining us live from Atlanta and Los Angeles, respectively. And now a tribute. Some of the great writing teams of television, comedy, and drama did their thing in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And one of the very best, a team that lasted for three decades, was the team of Bernie Orenstein and Sol Turtletaub. Turtletaub, 87 years great, passed away this past Friday of natural causes in Los Angeles. And if you don't know about the work of Bernie Orenstein and Sol Turtletaub, you ought to, because chances are you've enjoyed one of their great classic comedies. They started work in the 1960s, working on such shows as That Girl, which was actually created by another great writing team, Bill Persky and Sam Denoff. Bill was on our program a number of years ago when he did a great book called about situation comedy, and we had him on twice. He was really sensational. So he and Bernie actually got going on shows like That Girl, and in a big way, on The Carol Burnett Show. They were among the original writing team for that very popular variety series that lasted over a decade on CBS. They also did Love American Style. They did Sanford and Son. They were one of the key producers on that long-running NBC comedy series from Norman Lear starring Red Fox. And then they started a company of their own called Toy Productions. One of their big projects was What's Happening. That was a very popular ABC sitcom with a fun theme by Henry Mancini based on the motion picture Cooley High. And in addition, they did the sequel, which was in syndication for several years, called What's Happening Now. They kept the hits coming, including Kate and Allie, and much, much more. And they also did a show that also got another wonderful writing team, Gary Marshall and Jerry Belson, off the ground, called Hey Landlord. You can see some episodes of that on YouTube, starring Will Hutchins and Sandy Barron. A really underrated sitcom, and a lot of fun, too, to see. Great theme song by Quincy Jones. Sol Turtletaub and Bernie Orenstein, when you talk about classic comedy writing teams, they were in the pantheon of the great ones. And now they're both gone. Turtletaub leaves behind his wife and family members. Again, Sol Turtletaub passed away on Friday at the age of 87. He was a fantastic comedy writer, one of the very best, with his partner Bernie Orenstein, and both of them will be missed. I want to thank all of our guests for being with us this past hour and all of you for tuning in on Tomorrow Be Televised. I hope your weather is good. I know we're going to get through this rainstorm by tonight, and the weather, I understand, for the rest of the week here in New York is good. Coming up Friday on the program, we will have Rhodes Fishburne. He is the executive producer, creator, and writer of the new series that premiered earlier today on Charter Original Spectrum, and that is called Paradise Lost. It will soon be on Paramount Network as well. Rhodes Fishburne will be our lead guest from Paradise Lost, very interesting Southern Gothic mystery series. And then, from Hub Entertainment Research, our good friend, senior consultant David Tice, will talk about the brand-new study he co-authored, Connected Home 2020. And we'll also ask him, why aren't smart TV sets and smart TV devices doing more to deal with the coronavirus pandemic and give us all services that we can deal with while we stay at home? I think it's very interesting to hear what you have to say. Anyway, thank you all for joining us. Thanks to Audible.com, our sponsor. Thanks to all the people at Blog Talk Radio that helped put this together. And for Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of the week. Please hang in there. Follow those guidelines. We are licking this pandemic. We'll be back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and the iRadio Podcast Network. Don't forget the Music Business Program. Sorry those of the participants, not sorry those of the people that bring you this program. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.